60 years ago, the first U.S. satellite was launched into space. It's cosmic history with an Iowa connection. It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later in the hour, the mission in 1958 that discovered the Van Allen radiation belt. Also in today's Quick Conversations, IPR's Joyce Russell with an update from the State House. Will Iowa make needle exchanges legal to combat the opioid epidemic? A story of alleged racial profiling this week in West Des Moines, and Clear Lake's winter dance party and the man who saved the surf ballroom. Buckle up for your news buzz. First, this news from NPR.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Ooh, later in the program, you want to stay tuned, a bit of space history, rocket history involving Iowa. Did you know that it was 60 years ago that the first satellite from the United States was launched into space? And on board that satellite, that rocket, was an instrument designed and built by University of Iowa physicist James Van Allen. We'll tell you the story of the stunning discovery of what we now call the Van Allen radiation belt 60 years ago. But let's start our News Buzz hour off with Joyce Russell, IPR's State House correspondent. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
Let's talk quickly about a number of topics being debated, issues being debated at the State House. I want to mention that we'll be able to talk about a number of these in depth on Monday, on our Legislative Monday edition of River to River. But let's just briefly survey a few of the things that are going on right now. I understand a death penalty debate going on in both houses.
Death penalty bills introduced in both houses, and a surprise outcome in the debate in the House. There was a subcommittee meeting, lots of people there jamming into a room, speaking out on the death penalty. It would have reinstituted the death penalty under limited circumstances. And at the very end of the meeting, the Republican lawmaker who was the head of the subcommittee, you might have expected him to be in support of the bill, at the very end said, "I can't support this bill." He considered himself a death penalty supporter, but he said the more he studied it, the more he realized it was unfairly applied, that it doesn't save, that it costs the state money, and the prospect of people being unfairly executed was just too much for him to take, and so he's no longer a supporter of the bill. That makes the prospects for that bill in the House slim and none, really. The chairman of the Public Safety Committee said he doesn't have the votes in his committee either, so it doesn't look like there's going to be a penalty bill in the House. There is still a bill available for debate in the Senate.
Let's talk about some more gun legislation. Of course, last year's session in 2017, a whole slew of new gun laws for Iowa. What's being considered now?
Well, there's a proposed constitutional amendment to secure Second Amendment rights in the Iowa Constitution. That's controversial for gun safety people because they believe that what it would do is put a strict, what they call a strict scrutiny standard for any Iowa gun laws. So any gun laws passed in the future, the opponents of this say that it would be easier to launch a court challenge, a constitutional court challenge, and be unable to enact any additional gun laws. The backers of this amendment say it is not their intention to overthrow any current gun regulations in Iowa, but gun safety folks are suspicious of that, so that's kind of dividing along predictable lines. Mm-hmm.
Also, legislation, I understand, gun legislation having to do with schools?
Yeah, another pretty limited bill backed by the Firearms Coalition folks. Currently, you know, there's a law in the books that you can't have guns on school property, and it's a felony to carry a gun onto school property. Well, the Firearms Coalition people point out that when that law was passed, there weren't that many people who have permits to carry weapons and walk around armed, essentially. Now there are 300,000 Iowans with permits, legal permits to carry weapons. And this is a scenario they describe, that a gun owner walks around, plays, works, and does his thing all day long while carrying a concealed weapon. He gets a call from his spouse, "I need you to go pick up your son at school." He goes to the school, he drives into the circle drive there at the school to pick up his child, and he's created a felony. He described the scenario that what a gun owner has to do is, before he gets to the school grounds, pull over, unload his weapon, secure his weapon in the trunk, go pick up the student, then reverse that process. So this bill would make this limited exception for guns on school property, that if you're dropping off or picking up a student, you could still remain armed. And it passed with bipartisan support out of a subcommittee. Mm-hmm. Again, the usual opponents. Not quite as outspoken on this. There is one gun safety group that is registered just observing the bill. Other people who tend to oppose gun bills are opposed to this one too.
Mm-hmm. One other gun related one. We deal a lot these days with fake news, but this has to do with fake guns. And if you commit a robbery with a fake gun.
That's right, and this comes from prosecutors, and actually the convenience store owners are backing this bill. They describe a scenario where someone holds up a convenience store, for example, with a fake gun. Well, then that becomes hard for prosecutors to prosecute. If it's a fake gun, chances are they're going to leave the premises and toss it into the bushes, and without the weapon, they can't prosecute this as an armed robbery. And there was quite sort of moving testimony at a subcommittee hearing on this, that, you know, fake gun or real gun, the clerk at that store doesn't know that and is traumatized either way. Now, this bill started out to treat a fake gun as a real gun in any kind of offense or any kind of assault. And this narrowed it down to only for a robbery that you would be able to be charged just as though you had a real gun. And I'm not sure where that bill is going to go, mm-hmm. but it did come out of the subcommittee.
Sanctuary cities—that's a term we hear a lot have in the last months or the last year. Of course, I don't think any mayor in Iowa would claim to be the mayor of a sanctuary city. That term is a bit loaded at this point, but there is some legislation having to do with so-called sanctuary cities.
Yes, it's legislation that spells out things that cities cannot do that would be interpreted as discouraging enforcement of federal immigration laws or cooperating with federal authorities. You're right that, and it's sort of been framed as a ban against sanctuary cities. You're right that no Iowa cities have declared themselves to be sanctuary cities. However, the backer of this bill, Representative Dennis Holt, said that Iowa City was moving in that direction with its ordinance that said that the city could not use any local resources to enforce federal immigration standards. But he was careful to say that this bill would maintain the status quo, in other words, prevent anyone from going any further to not cooperate with federal immigration officials.
Mm-hmm. Nearly a month into this term of the legislature, the first bill was signed by the governor on water quality, right?
Just as she had hoped, and it was a big ceremony in her formal office. This was the water quality bill that spends about $282 million over the next 12 years for various water quality projects on the farm and to help cities and counties as well with water quality. A lot of people worked on this bill, didn't go nearly as far as some people wanted it to. There was some rather bitter opposition to it.
Yes.
But it did bring together a lot of stakeholders, and they were all there with the governor for her first bill signing in her formal office.
Tell us about the budget cuts that are being discussed in the legislature. There's a variety of them, right?
Right. You know, it's the legislature's job to go in and pass the budget for the next fiscal year. That's the sort of the one thing that the legislature always has to do the last couple of years, last year and then again this year, for the fiscal year that we're in right now, that we're halfway through. That budget was based on anticipated revenues that did not come through. And so the governor has recommended a package of budget cuts. The Senate Republicans have come in with a much more extensive package of cuts. They say they want a bigger ending balance. They want to be prepared in case revenues again are downgraded or the projections are lowered when that happens again in March. So, you know, virtually every facet of state government is affected by this. Education, the courts, and human services affected the most. And now people are just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, for the House to come through and see whether they're going to go along with these more extensive cuts that Senate Republicans have proposed.
Joyce Russell, always such a pleasure to talk with you and a brief update about a variety of issues being addressed in the legislature. And we'll have more time. We have a reporters roundtable. You'll be a part of that on this coming Monday. We'll discuss these and other issues before our lawmakers. Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Of course, our nation is in the midst of a serious opioid epidemic. The statistics are startling. More than 64,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in 2016, including illicit drugs and prescription opioids. That's about 175 deaths per day in this country. Now, needle exchanges are part of the conversation to tackle the epidemic. And needle exchanges, if you don't know, that's a service that allows injecting drug users to obtain hypodermic needles and paraphernalia at little or no cost. Now, more than 30 states have legalized the distribution of needles with approved exchange programs. However, needle exchanges are still illegal in Iowa. And now some advocates here are saying legalizing them will help fight the heroin and opioid use that is devastating our country. Our own Katerina Sestarek has been reporting on this issue, and she joins me now. Hi, Katerina.
Hello, Ben.
So what's been happening here?
So here in Iowa, there is currently a bill that would decriminalize the distribution of syringes for programs that are approved by the Iowa Department of Public Health. So that would help set up syringe exchange programs or needle exchange programs. And right now, there have been some advocates at the State House trying to get this bill passed because, as you said, there are more than 30 states that already have legalized this type of program and have been using these programs for years. And so the thought behind them is that they sort of tackle the people who are already at the point who are injecting, they're already at the point of injecting drugs. So this program is meant to help stop the spread of disease and to help connect people to treatment programs when they do decide that they want to stop using drugs or try to stop using drugs. That can provide a linkage into those types of programs and into other healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the State House this week, Dr. Chris Burrish was there. He's a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Iowa. And he said more people are injecting drugs and that dirty needles spread diseases.
The use of injection drugs then comes all this other stuff, all this other baggage that comes along with it, mostly hepatitis C and HIV. And so we've seen huge rises in hepatitis C throughout the country, but especially in here in Iowa as well. And we don't even really know, truthfully, the extent of the hepatitis C epidemic that we're facing because not very many people have been tested.
Okay.
And so he also talked about seeing some patients in Iowa City with this bacterial infection that reaches the heart. It does a ton of damage, and it leads to a weeks-long hospital stay and as much as $1 million in medical costs for one patient. And these are all things that are just spread from injection drug use.
Mm-hmm. Still, there is a debate. Others who are not quite on board here feel that providing free needles encourages illegal drug use, right?
Right. So that's something that, you know, at this briefing at the Capitol on Wednesday about syringe exchanges, there's some lawmakers who are already really on board with this idea. And there are some who feel that this might be promoting drug use. because, you know, it seems like, well, here's all the tools to do it, and they're just handing it out. But public health officials say that there's a lot of research, since this has been done in other states for years, that they do not lead to increased drug use and that they do help stop the spread of diseases.
Mm-hmm. You got to know in one of your reports people working with a nonprofit organization called the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition. Now, they're going about this, what, ignoring the law?
Not quite. The organization itself, they do not hand out needles officially. They have a group that's associated with them that sends out volunteers that sometimes join this group, and they hand out these syringes. But yes, it is illegal. And now there are like local law enforcement officials who are aware that those programs are going on in the cities that they're going on. They so far have not run into any trouble with law enforcement. And so, yes, this is already taking place in Iowa, and it is more volunteers are taking up the cause throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. What will you be watching in reporting on this story in the coming weeks, Katarina?
Well, next week, a subcommittee will be discussing this bill. And right now, the governor's Office of Drug Control Policy is still registered as undecided on the bill. So we're not sure, you know, where this bill will end up. The interim director of that office says his office is still learning more about syringe exchange programs, so that's why they haven't decided yet. But there are some medical and law enforcement associations that are registered in support of the bill, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. IPR's Katarina Sestarek, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 60 years ago, the first U.S. satellite was launched into space.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. By command. Fuel tank pressurized. Launch tank pressurized. Missile power. Ignition. Space tank. Liftoff.
No, that is not some B-grade science fiction movie from the 1950s. It is from the 1950s, 60 years ago, 1958. That was the actual sound of the historic mission Explorer 1 launched 60 years ago. On board, an instrument designed and built by University of Iowa physicist James Van Allen. Let's take a moment to remember that mission and the stunning discovery of what we now call the Van Allen radiation belts. Allison Janes is with us, assistant professor of physics and astronomy at the University of Iowa. Welcome to our studio, Allison.
Thank you.
And you are also co-investigator of what are called the Van Allen probes, a NASA mission. It's been going on for a few years. We'll ask you about that in a moment. But let's get back quickly to the story of the late 1950s. We are just a year or so after the Russians successfully launched the first satellites ever, Sputniks. And so this is the start of the Cold War space race. How did an instrument designed and built by a University of Iowa professor, physicist James Van Allen, come to be put aboard this mission?
Right. This was just about 4 months after that first Sputnik launched. And how it came about was that they were looking for an instrument to put on board this first U.S. satellite, the first successful U.S. satellite. And they had already known of Dr. Van Allen's studies with what were called rockoons, where he would put a balloon into space with a rocket attached to it. He would fire the rocket, and it would get up into the very upper reaches of the atmosphere. And he'd been putting instrumentation on those rockoons. And so they said, well, let's put one of your instruments on this first U.S. space satellite.
Okay. And lo and behold, you know, so many of our scientific discoveries, breakthroughs these days are confirmations of theories that we have, looking for things, especially when it comes to space. But when we talk about the Van Allen radiation belts, was that such a case? Or when it got up there, what happened? This was a startling discovery, right?
It was. This was completely unexpected. They had received the data and were blown away by it. There's all these great pictures of them huddled around James Van Allen's desk, him and his grad students, and they're just trying to figure out exactly what they saw because they couldn't understand it. There's even a preserved note that one of his students wrote on his door that said, "Space is radioactive."
Space is radioactive. So I was asking, when you say they saw it, in quotation marks, they're looking at data. What specific data? Radioactive particles in our atmosphere?
Mm-hmm. So they did have a cosmic ray device on board that the Explorer 1 satellite. And what they had found instead of this cosmic ray background that they had been seeing from their raccoons, they found the structure, and it looked like there were some kind of belts or rings around the Earth made of high-energy particles.
Mm-hmm. So what do they look like? Do they... Is it like the belt on my pants, or is it is it circling in every direction around the globe?
It's a little bit like a donut, and then you have a concentric donut. So you maybe have two or three concentric donuts kind of circling the Earth, where you have a toroidal shape is what we call it, but it looks like a donut.
Okay, toroidal. Oh, yes, I remember that from high school. Sure. Geometry? Would that be geometry?
Sure.
Anyway, what is the significance of these belts?
There's so much to study with them. They have so much impact on our lives. We have a lot of events down on our surface level, but also in space that influence our satellites that work for communications and technologies that we use every day that are influenced by space weather, this term we call space weather, which encompasses the radiation belts, how they change with time. Would they go up and down, and they increase and decrease in intensity? And that all affects what we do here on Earth.
Mm-hmm. And they're still being studied now. There's still questions about these radiation belts that were discovered 60 years ago.
That's right. That's right. There's so many questions.
What specifically do we need to know?
Well, for example, if you want to walk outside and walk to work and you want to know the weather forecast, you look at the terrestrial weather sites, and they'll tell you if it's going to be sunny or rainy. And
I listen to Dennis Reese, but all right.
Sure.
I'll take your version.
Yep. And then you get the prediction, and you know what you want to wear, and you know how you're going to live your life that day. Right now, we don't have that same prediction for space weather. So we can't tell communication satellites when they need to turn off to protect themselves. And we can't tell pilots when they shouldn't fly over the poles to protect themselves. So we're looking for a better forecast method.
Mm-hmm. And you are co-investigator on the Van Allen probes, a NASA mission. We don't have much time, but tell us, what are you doing? It was a mission launched in 2012. What's the goal of this?
The goal is just to study that radiation environment and to figure out how the sun itself actually drives those radiation belt increases and decreases. So a lot of it is tied into our solar structures, such as flares that come off the sun. Those really affect our radiation belts. And so we're trying to figure out what the connection is between the sun and then the radiation belts that encircle our Earth.
Mm-hmm. And these probes, as part of this mission, are they circling the globe right now?
They are. They're still up. They're taking beautiful data 5.5 years later.
So when you go back to your office here at the University of Iowa, you can tap into data from the Van Allen probes.
That's right. Uh-huh. Every day.
You do. You do. And so we'll be looking for a discovery from you of more significance to the Van Allen belts. So this is very interesting. And you've just come to the University of Iowa. Allison Janes, this is must be quite a kick to come to a university with such an astrophysics background in history.
Absolutely. To be in the same building as Dr. Van Allen had worked for so many years, and to just know about all that history that came from Explorer 1, you know, we can really trace the whole arc of modern society from that launch.
Wow. Okay. Maybe we'll have time, I hope, in the future to talk more thoroughly about your work. It sounds fascinating. Allison Janes, Assistant Professor of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Iowa, co-investigator of the Van Allen probes NASA mission. Thanks for coming in, Allison.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, the story of an alleged racial profiling this week in Des Moines. Also, Linn County pays $285,000 to a man wrongly jailed for 68 days. Law and order in the first part of our second half hour. And then we dance out the edition of River to River with Clear Lake's Winter Dance Party. And we learn about the man who saved the surf ballroom. Yes, that surf ballroom in Clear Lake where Buddy Holly and others played their last gig. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back in just a moment.